The opinions expressed here are those of the individual participants. Prairie Coast Community Radio takes no position on issues discussed in this program.
Hi, I'm Candace Michelle, and you're tuned into another episode of Our Community. You know, I've noticed that a lot of my guests are community volunteers, working long hours and investing a lot of their own money in projects that help make our area a better place for us all to live in. This week, my two very special guests are again long-term volunteers. Holly Beyer, who worked tirelessly in the formal gardens in Azalea Park, keeping it watered, weeded, and beautiful, and Dennis Triglia, who served for several years on the Brookings City Council, bringing his science background and research capabilities to those council decisions. Today, they're both here to talk about something very dear to their hearts, the Monarch Butterfly, and the upcoming second annual Monarch Festival. Welcome to the show, Holly and Dennis.
Hi.
Thank you.
So first, I want to thank you both for your service to this community. I think it's safe to say that you've both put in thousands of hours over the last few years. And while the average resident benefits from all of your hard work, they don't actually know who to thank. So I'm going to do it for them. Thank you. It's sad to me that you are both seen as a threat by people currently in power, but hopefully that will change. So now let's talk about the monarchs. Who are they? I mean, it's not Prince Philip, and I mean, who are the monarchs?
The iconic monarch butterfly is has been around forever. Everybody remembers it from when they were children. It's orange and black, and
beautiful.
It has a specific way of flying that's different from the other ones, so you would recognize it when you see it. And they're currently in danger because of habitat loss and some other things that maybe we'll have time to go into later. Mm-hmm. The Latin name, if anybody wants to know, is Danaus plexippus.
Oh.
So that's...
Can we call them Plexi for sure?
Sure, why not?
Okay.
Just don't call them late for dinner.
There we go. Well, they'll never be late for dinner from what I can see.
No, yeah. They never are.
Never. Yeah, that's their prime motivation, appears to be eating. Yeah. So the monarchs are this butterfly that we all recognize from our childhood, although what I'm seeing is a whole lot less monarchs than I remember seeing when I was a kid. What do you think? What happened?
A lot of it is due to things like habitat losses, pesticide usage, and more frequent severe droughts due to climate change. In 2016, the Center for Biological Diversity petitions the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service to consider adding the monarch butterfly to the endangered species list. A decision was made to be was supposedly to be made by 2019. On May 24th, 2019, the listing decision deadline was extended, and now the listing decision has been moved to December 15th, 2020. The decline that we're seeing primarily is in the Western monarch population. Western versus Eastern, they're identical, but we use the Rocky Mountains as the divide for Eastern and Western.
I'm assuming they can't get over the Rocky Mountains. Is that a fair assumption, do you think?
No.
Really?
Yeah.
They could get over them?
Or through at some point, whether it's along a river or a waterway or whatever. So,
okay.
But they're generally separated. They're generally separated. And 99% of all of the monarchs in this country are Eastern monarchs. So we only have 1% of the monarchs as Western monarchs on this side of the Rockies.
1%?
Right.
Wow.
But with that 1%, in 1980, at the overwintering sites, at over 100 overwintering sites in Central California, where Xerxes does a Thanksgiving Day count, a manual count with volunteers counting the number of butterflies, in 1980, there were 4.5 million at about 100 sites combined down there.
Oh, my word.
In 1997, that number had dropped to 1 million. In 2017, that number was down to 192,000. And last year, it was originally about a little more than 50,000, but when a storm went through, it wiped out more than half of them. So we were down to less than 30,000 individual butterflies.
And now, wait a minute. That went from 4 million?
From 4 million to 30,000.
Oh, my God.
And that's just in a few decades.
And do you think that that is because of the... I know that milkweed is the plant that they grow on and eat, and that is a weed. So, you know, do you think it's because of the destruction of milkweed?
It's mainly habitat loss, I would say, and pesticide usage. People have to learn when they use pesticides that read the label, use the appropriate amount of pesticide, make sure that the insect that you're trying to get rid of, you know, is there, and try all sorts of cultural means to reduce the need for pesticides in your garden. You know, use home remedies if you can, and only use the more toxic chemicals if you absolutely have a real bad infestation. Everybody should be able to put up with a little bit of damage to their to the plants in their garden. Nothing has to be perfect, and it isn't in nature anyway.
Right, and so, you're basically sharing.
Right.
I mean, that's what I always think is, you know, when I see the birds on my apple tree taking a bite out of this apple, and then moving on to this apple and taking another bite, I figure, all right, there are a certain number of apples that I'm willing to share with the birds.
Right.
You
exactly.
know?
And remember,
and
all of these species are interdependent.
Yes.
I mean, all of
yes.
all life is interdependent.
Exactly.
And sometimes if you lose just one species, you can upset a whole line of, you know, of the food chain.
And
basically.
Will have unintended consequences.
Exactly.
You may
exactly.
find yourself going, oh, where are the deer?
Right.
Well,
right.
they're gone because, you know, yeah, it's and I think that that's something that we lose sight of because we've become so urbanized, generally speaking, that we lose sight of that interdependence. And,
yes.
you know.
And everybody wants a green golf course lawn. It's like my neighbors hate me because I don't use anything. And so all the weeds are now seeding out and traveling into their yards. But those weeds are so busy with bees and little butterflies. And, you know, so what if you have weeds? I just don't understand the golf course green lawns that people
no,
have.
No, I don't either. And in particular, the flowers on some of those weeds are just gorgeous.
They're stunning.
I mean, even dandelions. Where do you see that kind of brilliant
right.
yellow? Where else? I
right.
mean, it's...
And monarch adults like dandelions. So they're
well,
fine.
That's good to know. Yeah. I will make sure that I keep my
dandelions. That's right.
So tell me more about monarchs, Dennis.
Their life cycle or their...
Yeah, sure. Let's talk about life cycle.
Okay. So, what Holly and I have been doing and, a number of other, individuals in Brookings, Oregon, Monarch Advocates, we're sort of citizen scientists and we, have planted milkweed and are encouraging everybody else to plant some more milkweed because if you plant it, they will come.
Yeah.
I could explain that in a few minutes.
Good.
Well, we'll have plenty of time.
Mm-hmm.
And, So we go out to our milkweed patches and we watch if there was any female activity laying eggs around our milkweed patches during the day. And then we check them every evening or late afternoon and collect the eggs. And then we bring the eggs indoors and raise them
on a piece of milkweed.
On just a little piece of milkweed.
Leaf, right.
And then when the egg hatches, the little caterpillar that's about a sixth of the size of a grain of rice emerges and turns around and eats its egg and then proceeds to eat the leaf and doesn't stop eating for 2 weeks.
And so, they get voraciously hungry.
Yes, exactly. And one of my friends calls them caterpiggles instead of caterpillars.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, so the caterpillar is the larval stage, if you're following along with metamorphosis, which is
the
body changes that... that a butterfly goes through as it matures. So after it goes through five larval stages, each one getting bigger and it sheds its skin behind it, it will be ready to go into the pupa stage or the chrysalis. Some people call it a cocoon.
Mm-hmm.
It stays in the chrysalis for about 10 to 14 days, depending on the temperature and a number of other factors. And then different cells that were in the caterpillar are geared to become certain organs in the butterfly. So it's almost like there's a kind of a soup, but not really inside it, but with specific cells that are pre-programmed genetically to know what they're going to become, whether it's going to be the heart or the wings or whatever. Right. And so after 10 to 14 days in the chrysalis, this beautiful butterfly emerges. And it within the first 5 minutes, you see it working its mouth part, or not mouth part, but they're actually little palps in the mouth area. And it tries to get its proboscis fused together because it's made in two parts.
Okay.
And the proboscis is the means by which the adult will feed because they no longer have a mouth. So the caterpillar had a mouth and ate, and so they because they only eat nectar now. They don't, adult butterflies don't eat milkweed.
Okay.
So you need to remember you need food for both the larval stages, which is milkweed,
right,
or for the female to lay her eggs on. And then you need nectar flowers around your garden, preferably ones that will bloom through the whole season so that if there's any monarchs that come early or later, they'll still be able to feed. But it's more important later because the super migration, which is the final generation of about four generations after they start flying north, will need to build up their fat stores so that they can make it down there and make it through the winter. The first three generations only live for 2 to 6 weeks. Their sole function is just to become a butterfly, mate, and die.
Wow.
And leave trillions of eggs behind.
Exactly.
This year. This year.
And if your name is Ovaltine, we'll talk about your female Ovaltine.
Oh my God.
But the final generation will live up to about 9 months, and they don't reach sexual maturity until about January when they mate down in the overwintering populations and start the migration back up north.
It is
north.
Fascinating to me.
Yeah.
It's like, how do the generations know which generation they are? I mean,
right.
It's like the whole DNA
thing must
be just fascinating.
It's just a whole thing. And they would love to do like DNA testing to see if, because the last 3 years is when I've been involved because of Dennis Triglia here. He said to me at an Indivisible meeting, he goes, "Oh, and I raise butterflies." I went, "What? What do you mean you raise butterflies?"
Yes.
And so then
can I do it too?
Right. Yeah, and so we got hooked, and it's just been a big journey ever since. But my first butterfly, I named Henry, and it was a girl. When she became a butterfly, so we named her Henrietta. And
this was last year?
That was 3 years ago.
Ah, okay.
And then the year after, I just had one that came to the house mm-hmm. and laid about 20 eggs, mm-hmm. and that was it. And then last year, I had one that laid, I think, maybe 30 eggs.
Mm-hmm.
And in my crazy brain, I thought, well, these are Henrietta's great, 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 great grands that knew to come back to Henrietta's home because that's just the way my brain works.
Is that not possible?
It is possible
okay.
because I throw my crazy theories to Dr. David James, who is head of the tagging program, and he said, "You're not too off base." He said, "If we could do DNA testing, we would know for sure." But they do leave a scent in your yard for up to 2 to 3 years. So that scent could be programmed into their little neurons, their brains. I call them brains because I think they're very smart. And then this year, I don't know if you want to get into Ovaltine yet.
Of course I want to talk about Ovaltine.
So on July 2nd at about 10 o'clock in the morning, I walk out on my deck with a cup of coffee. And I look up and, oh, my first monarch of the season. Oh, my gosh, what a treat. Well, for the next 12 days, she came to visit me from about 10 in the morning till her bedtime, which is about 5 or when the sun is no longer in my yard. And so far, I have collected, or hers were 588 eggs that I collected.
Wait, 588 eggs from one butterfly?
From one butterfly. And they can hold up to, I think, 600 to 800 eggs. So
holy,
she deposited some somewhere else before. And then after July 13th, I didn't see her ever again. So I don't know if she, you know, wandered on to another patch or whatever. But I have a lot of milkweed in pots up on my deck. And so as I was looking at the pots, we would bump heads together because she was busy laying eggs and I'm clipping the eggs off. And then I figured, okay, I'm done for today. Well, she comes right behind me and starts laying more. So it was like a 8-hour situation. And I told Dennis this.
Holly, that's like a full-time job.
It was a full-time job.
Oh,
and
my God.
Thank you, Wendy, because she's my chiropractor, and I wouldn't have been able to do it without her.
Exactly.
But I told Dennis, I said, oh, my gosh, I've got 150 eggs, and she's still laying eggs. And he goes, I'll be over to help. And so he came over with his scissors, and we clipped. And it was, I think it might have been a Checo effect day. I don't know, but it was hot out.
Yeah.
And so, you know, he, I think, collected, I don't know, probably 100 or something, and so did I. But we put out a help sign to all the people in town that, you know, are trained to raise butterflies.
Right.
And so we got rid of a lot, fostered them out to mm-hmm. qualified people. And then Medford also, there's no monarchs except for Brookings, really. There's been maybe one or two seen.
How is that possible? They all decided to come to Brookings?
Well, no, it's Ovaltines. I mean, probably all the ones that we see in town are her sons and daughters.
Wow.
I can vouch for that because with some of the earliest eggs that Ovaltine had left, they hatched, and I tagged them and released some butterflies on the 31st of July, uh-huh. which was 29 days after you saw her, Holly. And now my little Monarch Way Station has been visited by several of Holly's children because I can read their tag numbers because I had put a tag on them. And I have my Monarch Way Station milk patch is just under 100 square feet. And in
10 by 10, basically.
Just about 10 by 10, okay. Right. And in the 13-day period between August 8th and August 20th, when I stopped collecting eggs, because
out of
they started
desperation.
Well, because and because they started showing up elsewhere in Brookings, so it wasn't just Holly and I anymore.
Okay.
In that 13-day period, I collected 1,068 eggs from either one or two females. So,
my goodness!
So I mean, it's unbelievable. So people always ask, well, I don't have the space for a Monarch Way Station. Just put a few plants in pots out uh-huh. wherever you can, and uh-huh. they'll come and find it.
They mm-hmm. will find it.
It's just
it.
Amazing. So
especially this
remarkable.
Year, they are looking for milkweed. I don't think we have enough milkweed in the area to support all of Ovaltine's children. My total count now is 1688. 588 was Ovaltine's, and then the rest are from her sons and daughters. And they're right now up there just busy, busy covering my plants. I have to actually...
I'm kind of in shock here.
We are too.
Thank
Be
you,
careful
Wendy.
What you this, ask for.
This is really an anomalous event, and it's gotten the attention of a lot of lepidopterists that we've spoken to. Holly already mentioned Dr. David James. Dr. James works in Eastern Washington at the university, and he's been studying butterflies since the 1970s, I believe. And he was just really interested in why Brookings and why only Brookings. And so what we did was we put the word out that we had more eggs than even all of the people here in Brookings that have been trained to raise them can raise.
Yep.
And we had two visits already. One day we had people from Medford, Ashland and Bend come, and we sent them home with 400 eggs. And then we thought, well, I wish we had given them more because we still had so many. So it turned out that one of the people who lived in Ashland was visiting here with his two daughters, and I met him. And in the Fred Meyer's parking lot, I handed over a box with about 450 eggs and caterpillars. I'm sure it looked really suspicious.
Yes. but not a drug exchange. But this is a monarch exchange.
No money was exchanged.
Exactly.
And his daughters were delighted. I mean, they're just wonderful. They're going to go to different schools, you know, in Bend and in Medford and talent in the Illinois Valley. Lots of people were involved. And so it's really nice to have the Brookings Oregon Monarch Advocates is sort of an offshoot of the Southern Oregon Monarch Advocates. And we all work together whenever there's an emergency to do things, you know, for the benefit of the whole state.
Mm-hmm. And Miss Ovaltine caused this emergency.
I love it. I just love it.
I mean, we need a statue of her in Azalea Park.
There we go. I think that's great.
Which, by the way, I used to work with the Azalea Park Foundation in the formal gardens. We no longer do. But we planted milkweed and pollinator plants there, and we were there last week, and I thought, well, I'll check the milkweed, and it was covered in eggs. The first time ever in my life I've walked away from a monarch egg,
right?
But I had to because I have too many at my house.
Right.
And so hopefully whoever is caring for those gardens knows how to water the milkweed by not spraying on top. You water it from the bottom because with the fog here, the leaves will get mildewy. And then
that's kill the eggs.
Yeah, I mean, it's not good.
Right. So I see this bag of milkweed here that Holly brought me because I actually have some cats that I'm raising. So this is gorgeous milkweed. This is beautiful.
That's hairy ball milkweed that I had to cut the tops off because they were babies tucked inside, little teenies, I call them, that had hatched outside. And so I picked them off and I quarantined them because there's a lot of enemies out there, like the tea fly. Dennis can explain the proper name for that. And there's a wasp that is this teeny tiny little wasp that will inject his, well, Dennis can talk about that. I don't know the science. But what happens is maggots end up growing in the caterpillar, and they usually don't make it. So that's another reason that we take the eggs in, because there's so many enemies out there that will get them.
Yeah.
Even ladybug nymphs, they'll think it's an aphid, and so they'll just gobble an egg down like, oh, that was a special treat.
So I called them cats. That's kind of shorthand for caterpillars, just in case they aren't actually pussycats.
Absolutely.
So when you bring them in, their eggs, then within like 5 days or 7 days or so, they hatch. I think I have 34 caterpillars right now. Started out with, I think, close to 40 eggs, but I didn't actually count 40 eggs. I think I counted 36, so I'm not really sure what happened. But when each one of them hatched, the size of the caterpillar was that of an eyelash.
Yes.
It was no bigger than an eyelash.
And it was, you can mistake it for like a crumb, and then you squish it and you feel very, you know, like...
Yeah, no, I was doing everything with a magnifying glass and a pair of tweezers and, you know, being very careful. Because out in the wild, what is their survival rate?
The survival rate in the wild is between 2% and 5%. So only 1 in 20 to 1 in 50 butterflies will make it in the wild. When we rear them in captivity away from the predators, some of which Holly had mentioned, like the Trichogamma wasps and the tachinid flies, the survival rate goes up to about, you know, 90% or even higher for some people, lower for others, but still way better than 2%.
Right.
So just by raising them away from predators in as most natural conditions as we can. I mean, we try to keep our cubes right next to the outdoors, and they're all screened in so that no insects can enter in them. But this way they get to see exactly how much light and dark there is during the day so that we're not really stressing them.
Well, and that makes a difference, right? Because they're going to be regulating, or their body's going to be regulating, depending on how many hours there are in the day.
Once the summer solstice comes, they know it. And so they start, you know, getting ready for the next the next phase. And yeah, it's just all really interesting. So you want to make sure that you at least try to keep things as real as possible for them.
Right. Right. So right now what I have are plastic containers in which I have my little cats or caterpillars. How long before I need to take them out of the plastic container? They're inside a mesh cube as well.
Right.
But how long before they should come out of the...
What, second instar? I do second instar. Dennis, you...
There are... People differ on this. Some people will do it as soon as they're even instar one or the very first, you know, within a day or so of when it's born. But I don't like, with my big fingers, I don't like to touch these little tiny things at all for the first, you know, 3 days. So I'll let them go to instar two and then monitor them again. And when they hit about it, almost to instar three, then I'll put them on sprigs of milkweed in water, in floral tubes, so that the caterpillars can't fall into the water, and just put them on there because that's how they would normally be in nature. You know.
So instar is basically
about an inch for instar two
or three
about an inch. Yeah,
about an inch.
And instar is what you call the phases.
Oh, I'm sorry. The different larval phases or the different caterpillar phases as they get bigger. So there's an egg, and I mean, I do have a picture that I show at a lot of my seminars that has all five of the stages, so you can see them next to each other. But the little guy, the instar one, is just tiny, as you had mentioned already. And the instar fives, just before they go into a chrysalis, can be about 2 inches long. So they grow over 1,000 times their size.
Amazing.
And in terms of eating...
They eat their weight.
They eat more than their
weight. It would be, in the 2 weeks that they go through the five instar or larval phases, it would be the equivalent of an infant, a human infant, eating 1,200 to 1,600 pounds of formula in a 2 week period. So,
Baby Huey.
Yes, exactly.
Oh my goodness!
Yes. Yep.
Wow.
They eat a lot, and that's why we tell people, if you're going to do this, make sure you have sufficient milkweed, because you know, three caterpillars will devour an entire plant, an entire mature plant.
That's
so crazy. You have to be careful. And when I said I had 1,068 eggs, you can tell I would never have enough milkweed to feed them. So we had to look to other people to help.
Which is actually great if nobody else is getting monarchs this year.
Right.
You know, to be able to foster them out to people.
And especially further away. Dr. James said it was a good idea for us, though I don't think it was really an idea. It was just like a scream for help. that it some went to Bend, some went to Medford, and even the Elkton Butterfly Pavilion, they had nothing. And so I gave them, I think, 100 or 150 eggs in the beginning of Ovaltine's. And now they're, you know, they're doing, having more eggs and from the sons and daughters of Ovaltine.
The first time that I raised one, 2 years ago, and
I remember.
So I was frantic most of the time, right?
First one is
oh my God. So the first time, I found it on a leaf out in my garden, on a little milkweed leaf, and I'm talking, it was a little milkweed.
Right.
I mean, it couldn't have been much more than 2 inches tall, and I'm thinking, what is the whatever.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So I bring it in, I put it in its little mesh cage and all that stuff. Well, a couple of days later, it stopped moving. And I'm like, oh my God, I've just killed my first butterfly. So I'm panicked, right? Well, within a few hours, it had shed its skin. There was this little black shell that it left behind, and it was twice as big.
Yes.
And it's like, okay, this is what life looks like.
It's like, this sweater was a little tight.
There's one thing I haven't seen is the shedding of the skin. I haven't.
Yeah, I haven't actually seen the actual shedding of it. I've seen the remnants.
Right.
You know, and it's.
Has Dennis seen?
They only do it when you're not looking.
I know. Well, I think it's like at 2 a.m. or something.
Unless you happen to be there at 2 a.m.
That's right.
Not. Then they won't do it.
Right? Exactly.
But it's the first one is so exciting. I mean, I took pictures every minute of every day for Henrietta.
Yeah.
When Holly raised Henry, who ultimately was Henrietta. I kept all of the Facebook posts that she had made for the entire 19 days of its...
Oh, my.
And that was... Go ahead.
No, and it was just amazing. It was really cute at how excited Holly was. And everybody who was reading the post was weighing in, and they're like, that's so cool.
Yes. And it's nerve-wracking, because when that caterpillar stops eating... You think,
something's wrong.
Yeah, something's wrong. Mm-hmm. Well, it's not. It's just trying to wiggle out of that too tight sweater.
Yes.
And it does it like 4 times before it does the whole chrysalis thing.
Right.
And that's an amazing thing,
that
right?
That whole thing.
It climbs up to the top of the mesh cage, and it's like you're going, what? What are you doing? And then you walk away because they never do it right in front of you. And then you come back and it has formed a J.
Yep.
And its butt is stuck up on the ceiling.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And it's this J, and then starts to form this.
And it looks like an alien.
It's a lime green, neon green chrysalis that you just kind of go, wow.
Yep. I have seen that part, and it's just
so gorgeous.
It's how I'm. Yeah, it's amazing.
It really is. It's just, and what a science lesson.
Yes.
Oh, absolutely.
Really, what a science lesson.
Well,
look at what life looks like.
Yes.
From it in a different species, a different thing. Look at what it. Look at what it does. It's amazing.
And we're gonna try and do a training clinic for locals. Probably in the winter. I mean, this would have been the perfect time to do it because we have so many. So if anybody
bit stressed right now.
Well, not too bad because most of the caterpillars are off being fostered. So what does Holly do? She's got space in her room. She goes out and starts collecting eggs. I collected 125 this morning.
And
so
somehow I'm not surprised. And how many yesterday? There was like another 100 yesterday.
Yeah, exactly. So it's just hard to leave them out
to the elements.
I put bamboo canes around the outdoor plants, and I bought a big bolt of screening that, you know, for screen doors.
Mm-hmm.
And I put that around the plant to at least whatever is on the plant and to keep the females off the plant.
I don't really want any more
eggs. Mm-hmm. Please go to somebody else's
home. Go to somebody else's home. Please.
And I told Dr. James about that, and he emailed back, and he said, can I use that picture of your screened-in plants? I've never seen anybody do that. And I just went, oh, sure, go ahead.
This is called desperation. This is what desperation looks like. I just think it's remarkable.
It is. It's
so what kind of – I've been to your garden, and it's remarkable, Holly, but what kind of nectar flowers do you have so that when the butterflies...
So their most favorite is the butterfly bush. I mean, that if you have a butterfly bush in your yard, that is where all the action's going to happen with all the different butterflies and bees.
Wow.
I mean, they fight for, you know, a blossom. Like a painted lady will chase a monarch away or vice versa.
That's crazy.
And then the bees will be on it at the same time the butterflies are. And it's just, it's a riot. But I also have what they call ironweed, which is about 4 feet high, and it has a big white with tiny little flower blossom.
Mm-hmm.
Anything that has like a landing pad for the monarch, like echinacea, zinnias, they love zinnias.
Okay.
But you have to make sure if you grow them by seed that they haven't been treated with anything. And when you buy your plants in the store, that they haven't put that nicotine aside or whatever.
Something. Stuff.
Neonicotinoids.
Yeah.
Neonicotinoids.
Neonicotinoids.
And what are they?
It's just a a class of insecticides, basically.
Okay.
And so, you know, if you don't see any bugs on the plants that you buy in a nursery, then it's probably been treated with something.
Ooh. Oh, and I would caution just one more thing. A lot of people here do organic gardening, and so they're told that, well, there's a pesticide that you can use called BT toxin, which is a naturally occurring substance that comes from a bacillus and or a bacterium. The fact that it's organic doesn't mean that it's not going to kill the quote-unquote pests. But since monarchs happen to be insects, they're also killed by this.
Oh.
So just saying that you do organic gardening, you have to be even a little bit more careful not to, you know, to poison
I don't fertilize. I don't use anything on any of my stuff. You just treat it with good soil in the fall, put leaves down, you know, make your own compost and to make to dress your plant. And you know what? If there's extra bugs on it, you know, unless, well, unless they're the enemy bugs. Even ladybug nymph, oh, I think I mentioned that. You know, I love ladybugs, but the nymphs will eat the eggs too. So I take that leaf where I see a nymph and I put it on another plant just in case. Yeah.
So it just means that you have to be a little extra vigilant and I don't know, patient and you know, tolerant of other things, other bugs and stuff like that.
It's absolutely amazing to just watch the plants because as Holly mentioned, there'll be bumblebees sitting right next to honeybees, sitting right next to hummingbirds that are in your ear while this is going on. And then maybe a monarch will come and lay an egg on your nose if you're too close.
Yeah,
and,
it's
just, it's amazing how many things just sort of peacefully coexist in the garden. And it's kind of fun.
It is very fun.
So I'd like to talk a little bit about becoming a monarch city. How, when you were on the city council, you got that all together. So tell us a little bit about that.
Well, I had seen that there was a program that's administered by a gentleman named Russell Stubbles up in the state of Washington. And he and his wife, Bev, run this program called Monarch City USA, which is a kind of similar to the Tree City USA or, you know, where Brookings is also an Azalea City USA that we became while I was on the city council as well. But there were none in Oregon that had been that had achieved that status yet, and that's including Elkton, you know, who has So, so in May of 2017, I approached the council and asked them if they would be interested, and they wrote a proclamation declaring it Monarch Butterfly Month, and that they would agree to certain things. One of which is to hold an annual festival each year, and we'll get to that in a few minutes. So, you know, we agreed to the different things. We applied, sent the application in, and we heard back that we were selected as a Monarch City, and we have signs now at the north and south ends into town that say Monarch City USA. And I'm hoping that, you know, it's just, it's such a feel-good thing, whether or not we're actually helping the overall population, and I like to think that we are.
I don't see how we could not, given the numbers.
Well, every butterfly counts at this point.
Yes.
But it's just such a neat thing. And
it does feel good.
And I was also just pondering the other day that, you know, with Brookings being warmer than a lot of other cities in Oregon because of the Chetco effect and the southern-facing exposure, and climate change, which is now going even faster than they ever thought.
Yes.
It won't be long before Brookings may be the overwintering site. I was just musing about that. And so, you know, maybe we're talking 50 years down the road, but it's nice to be on the map for something like this. It was almost like a gift, you know, to just say, come to Brookings and come see the monarchs. And, and
because if you haven't seen an overwintering site, you need to see it.
Right.
It is amazing. The trees are dripping with monarchs.
That's
insane. It's like you just kind of, you can't believe it. At first you think that they're just leaves because there's so many. And then one of them will like move its wing or something and you're like, oh, the whole tree is
and
monarchs.
And then can you imagine the people that, I think Dr. James and his family goes down to California probably during like the peak part of the monarch rest area. And he has a very expensive like telescope camera to ping into where the tags are so that he can read the number of the tag. And, but, you know, here you have, what, thousands of monarchs hanging and, you know, the tag may be hundreds of feet up in the air. And, yeah, so he's very dedicated in, you know, all the research.
So tell me about the tagging, because that's interesting.
Yeah, the tagging, okay, first, when you think about tagging, you're thinking, you're going to put something onto a butterfly that's so little? Mm-hmm. Well, the butterfly weighs about the weight of a paper clip, and the tag only adds about 2% more to its body weight. It's a little plastic-coated adhesive tag, a little circular one, and it has a number, and a four-digit number, and a letter, and an email address. So if that butterfly is seen by anyone along the migration routes, it's basically to track their migration. So if anybody finds the butterfly, they can email the person, in this case, which is Dr. James, and let him know what the number was, and then he can tell where it came from. Wow. So for instance, I have a picture in my kitchen of one that I released in, I think it was 2017. And, of course, I name all of them because I consider them all individuals. We're all completely eccentric.
Absolutely.
But anyway, his name was Isaac, I-Z-A-K, I remember.
I love it.
And I have a picture of him before I released him. And then I have a picture of him hanging from a strand of orange and black butterflies, and he was photographed with his tag down in Santa Cruz. And it happened to 3 out of 89 of the ones that I released that year. And, you know, the goal is, I hope they find one of mine. I hope they find one of mine.
Because
then you know that, you know, it came from Brookings.
And
we've had several found down there now, several of the people in our group.
Mm-hmm. It will be interesting this year how many of, now they would be the grandkids of Ovaltine are found, because
there should be thousands.
I still have, I have one at home that I haven't released of Ovaltines, and then that will be the last of Ovaltines. Mm-hmm. Well, for the next 2 months here, there's going to be eggs laid triple on every leaf. And then in another month after that, we should see some pretty amazing butterflies in the sky.
Wow.
Right. I mean, there's going to be thousands, if not 10,000 or more. I mean, if every single one,
wow.
600 eggs per female.
Can you
imagine?
It
was pretty much the ones I raised, I think, either 75 or 80. I haven't counted them all yet. And half of them were females and half were males.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So
amazing.
Do the math. Yeah.
Amazing.
And the eggs that you'll find now are the eggs of the super generation, which is the generation that lives for 9 months.
Okay.
So as they're being deposited all over town,
right.
I mean, if you think about it, if let's say there's only 2,000 instead of, you know, 20,000.
Right.
Well, 2,000 compared to a total of less than 30,000 is
significant.
A significant percentage.
That's right.
And they're all from Brookings. I mean, this is wonderful. I'm so proud of our city.
It should be making national news.
It should really
be.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And we may work on a publication as well with some of the other doctors. So.
Now, you also did something with K School, didn't you?
Yes.
So what did you do there?
The same group that had the Monarch City USA program also started a few Monarch School programs. And since BOMA, the Brookings, Oregon Monarch Advocates, had been involved with some of the teachers in, I think, grades 3 through 6. I'm not sure exactly of which teacher had which class. We'd been bringing the eggs into the class so that the kids will, it's my goal to make sure that kids learn science in this town. And any little thing like this that they're really interested in is a helpful tool for them. So they'll learn the process, the life cycle changes, and what happens, and they're getting firsthand, and then they get to release the butterfly at the end, and it's been good. But so because we were doing that, and then because the little bear patch, which was a little garden at the Kelmeopsis Elementary School, had been neglected during the Chetco Bar fire, they had to replant the beds, and so they asked BOMA members if we would set up a pollinator garden there. So we set up 2 beds of milkweed, and then the Curry Watersheds Partnership came down and set up some other wildflowers there. And So another joint project with anybody who wanted to help. Mm-hmm. And now they're, I understand that they're painting a labyrinth in the garden, and they're going to put up some more pictures of butterflies. And we got a sign that said Monarch School. And when I ordered them, I ordered one female butterfly and one male butterfly, one to put on the garden and one to put above the school. And I would bet that if you ask the children which is which, they're going to know.
They know. They know. I love that.
So I have new neighbors that just moved in, and little kids, and they were making a lot of noise, and they said, "Oh, I bet the next door neighbors hate us already because we're so noisy." And I said, "No," I was in the garden. I said, over the fence. I said, "No, you're fine." And so then I peeked over the fence, and they asked me what I did, and I told them about the butterflies, and oh, we raised them in kindergarten, and they were probably second, third graders, so they remember.
That's
you know.
Great.
Yeah,
that's great. So you also have something coming up fairly soon called the Second Annual Monarch Festival. So tell us about it.
Well, for the past 3 months, between raising butterflies and planning the Monarch Festival, I haven't had much time for any of the other groups.
Yeah, you're looking a little tired is all I'm going to say.
Yes, but I lost weight, so that's a good thing. Right.
The Monarch diet.
Yeah, there you go.
So anyway, last year was our first, and so that was a real nerve-wracking one because we—
But it was also amazing, Dennis, because you figured there'd be like 100 people show up.
Exactly.
And there were like
700. Or 500,
right?
I don't know.
Between 500 and 700. We stopped counting after 500 because people—
Amazing.
We were writing down everybody's zip code, but people were just coming in right and left. There's no admission, obviously, and this is going to be free forever as far as you know, we're concerned. And it's just liked by all ages of people. I mean, there are some people significantly older than I who remember the days when there would be butterflies all over the place and milkweed puffs, you know, back east and that things. And, you know, it doesn't matter what political affiliation, what religion, what you name the minority or whatever. And everybody seems to like them. So it's a—
Because what is there not to like about a monarch butterfly? They are just elegant and gorgeous. Mm-hmm. So you're going to have
So we're going to have the second festival now. And this time, I didn't yet want to go all out with a whole thing. I mean, what we're gearing up for is possibly maybe as early as next year, depending on how this one goes. We may do a whole weekend of activities around town and make it a little bit bigger. We have just a couple of local vendors, and mostly it'll be BOMA volunteers selling things to try to make a little bit of money toward next year's festival. Mm-hmm. In addition, we'll have donation jars set up at each of our stations for people to throw in some spare change. And again, it's just to put on the festival next year.
Great.
I'm hoping that we could become self-sustaining by next year. Mm-hmm. You know, may take one more year. Mm-hmm. Our sponsors were the City of Brookings and the Talawa Dene Nation Tribal Council.
Nice.
This year, our major sponsors. I mean, we have a lot of individuals who donate both money and in-kind things. Several other organizations, such as KCIW, is helping us to get the word out. Mm-hmm. I've sent out press releases to over 40 news outlets in the western part of the state.
That's great.
We may even get some news coverage from KOIN in Portland.
Good.
So it's—
Well, it's a big deal.
It is.
Well, especially this year with Ovaltine. I mean, you know.
Right.
And then DD, I can't remember her last name.
Steele.
Steele up in Bend has been posting the flyers to her email list, which is huge. I mean, Audubon Society. I mean, just a lot of big organizations up there. So we may get a lot of people this year, and I hope we're ready. 2 weeks from tomorrow, 11 to 4 in the Bandshell in Azalea
You'll either
Park.
Be ready or you won't. I mean, that's right. It's one or the other.
Oh, and at the festival this year, some things that were different than last year.
Yeah, I want to talk about what some of the displays and stuff are. So yeah, by all means,
tell me. Thank you. We're going to have a food truck this year. We're going to have a, hopefully, a mobile beehive to, because monarchs are pollinators too. And so my goal is to sort of bring the whole thing together, why pollinators are important. I mean, most of what we eat has been you know, a lot of the vegetables and things have been pollinated. Even right. fabrics that we wear are from mm-hmm. plants that had been pollinated.
Yeah, right.
And so it's just an amazing thing. And, you know, there have been some problems with bee colony collapses mm-hmm. and things. And so we just want to make sure that we're doing the best things. And so I invited the master gardeners to come and set up a table. Great. They'll be there to answer any plant questions that you have, in addition to telling you a little bit more about what flowers can complement the milkweed. We're going to have the Masonic Child Identification Program there. So if parents want to register their children, and I believe they fingerprint and do a few other things, they'll be there. There'll be just a couple of vendors from around town. I didn't want to open it up to all vendors yet because I just want to try it first.
Right.
And, of course, the most important thing, there'll be crafts tables for the kids. And I know that Teresa Lawson will be working at that booth, and she's really happy to work with children and really cares
Teresa's
a lot about
great.
Brookings.
Yeah.
And there'll be lots of crafts for them. We're also having a painted rock table.
Oh, wonderful.
And Nikita will come down for that. There. And of course, one of the big hits last year was the life cycle experience. And
tell me
what
about
it we have all of the different phases of the life cycle that I mentioned before. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, the egg, the caterpillar, the chrysalis, and the adult. So what we do is we have an old, I think it was an old buoy, I think that's how you pronounce mm-hmm. it, and we cut it in half and open it up, and that's like the little ones can go inside the egg, and they come out of the egg, and then the Aww. Next phase is they get to crawl through a 22-foot long tube that's a caterpillar, and it even has little boots on its side for the feet, and then they're through the caterpillar phase, and then they get to spend some quiet time in the green tent, which is our chrysalis. And while they're inside during the chrysalis, since they have to sit there and let nature take its course, they'll be read to by several people, including Barbara Brownstein, our friend.
Wonderful.
And several other people who mm-hmm. read for the SMART program to some children. Mm-hmm. And then when they're ready to become an adult butterfly, they come out of the tent, and Stacia Ryder from the Curry Watershed Partnership will put on some wings, and they run around being little butterflies. So
wow.
With Maria being the leader in her
yes.
butterfly.
Oh, that's wonderful. That's wonderful.
And they just go through the whole park. Also, real quick before we forget, is there's going to be a pet and a child costume parade.
Ooh.
So dress your pets up, a caterpillar or an egg or a butterfly.
I can just see my dog with butterfly wings.
And your children, get creative and make your little costume, and we'll have a good time doing that.
I love that whole cycle thing because kids are often tactile learners.
Correct.
And to be able to actually be an egg mm-hmm. and be the caterpillar. Those are things that you then don't ever forget.
Right.
And they're just, you know, they become a part of you.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And that appreciation, which is, you know, to me a whole nother thing is, you know, when you're raised and school is inside, it's not outside, you know, you don't learn a
no.
lot
mm-hmm.
about the outside.
And, yeah. Right. Right.
You know,
and they'll remember that festival for the, you know, rest of their life. They'll
yes.
tell their grandkids when they're old enough and say,
yes.
remember, our,
yes.
I went to this Monarch Festival and it's still going on.
Yes, absolutely.
30
and now,
years later.
And now it's a whole week long instead
yes.
of a day long.
It's a month long.
I know. I mean, it really is an extraordinary thing if you kind of step back from it.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, last year we had a few monarchs, and this year,
well, we'll see. We're in kind of a cycle of no butterflies for the next couple of weeks because they're all either in caterpillar stage or they've already left the house. And Dennis mm-hmm. is really trying, putting the heat up in his house to get caterpillars to go into chrysalis by at least Monday. So they'll be ready for the
okay.
festival. So
I have some fifth instars.
Oh, good.
So I think we're set.
You think you're good?
Yeah. Okay. So we'll have some live butterflies to release.
We'll have a lot of caterpillars in all stages.
Mm-hmm. Yes, which is amazing.
Yes.
And when you look at one of those caterpillars and then look at a monarch butterfly, it's like, how does this become that?
I still don't get that. It's just amazing.
I call it miraculous.
No, it really is.
I'm more of a spiritual person, but... when you see it, it's just...
it's a miracle.
It's amazing. It's just amazing.
No, really. I absolutely agree. I mean, it's one thing, you know, you see a baby. Well, a baby looks like an adult is not that... I mean, it's much bigger and all that stuff,
right.
But it's basically
but it's still got the same
characteristics,
right?
Mm-hmm. Not so much with
With the butter, it's just...
completely different. I love it.
I do, too.
Okay, so guess what? We're
really?
Running. Yeah, I know, right?
But I had so much more. No.
Well, frankly, I think that the stories could go on for hours.
Oh, absolutely.
Because it's amazing. When you actually are raising the little buggers, it's amazing.
And just this Ovaltine phenomenon thing that happened this year.
Right?
I have more stories of her and myself carrying a pot. And she's following me, and then I put it down, and she lays an egg on it. I mean, I missed her when she didn't come back because we kind of became friends.
Oh, that's
so
sweet.
Yeah.
And Dennis, I have to remark that I love your T-shirt. It says the Monarch Whisperer, and I want one. You know, that's great.
I couldn't resist.
No, how can you? So in the less than 2 minutes we have left, are there any final thoughts? Is there any contact information for people who either want to have more information about raising monarchs, in doing something with the festival, whatever?
Well, if you're on Facebook, monarchs.me is Vicky Mian's Facebook page, and it has anything you need to know or you want to ask. Go to monarchs with an S at the end, .me on Facebook. And it's a great, great resource. And if you have a question she can't answer, she will lead you to someone that can answer it.
Perfect.
And then just September 7th, 11 to 4 in the Banshell area for the second annual Monarch Festival.
It's really exciting.
It's very exciting.
Is. Dennis?
And if you're interested in finding out more, you can email me personally. My email address is triglead, like Dennis, @yahoo.com. And I could put you in touch with the right people. If you're interested in wanting to learn how to raise them, let me know. If you're interested in volunteering at the festival, specifically if you're a young, strapping, good, strong people.
Right, who can lift things or put tents up.
Since most of us are...
older. Let's be generous.
Medicare card carriers.
Honored citizens, as they call us in Portland. We could use the extra help with lifting tables and setup. So thanks very much.
Absolutely. And thank you both for showing up.
Thank you.
It's been
And thank you for helping raise some of these
I love it.
Babies.
I love it. And thank you for listening. This has been Our Community with Holly Beyer and Dennis Triglia talking about the beautiful and endangered monarch butterfly. If you missed part of it, check out the podcast on our website, kciw.org. And while you're there, consider becoming a member and supporting your community radio station so that we can continue to bring you fine local programming. This is Candace Michelle.
The opinions expressed here are those of the individual participants. Curry Coast Community Radio takes no position on issues discussed in this program.